Morning. Greetings in Jesus' name this morning. It's good to be here. It's my first time in this God's house, this part of God's kingdom. I've been in the area before. I was here at Ron's ordination, just spent a little bit of time there that evening and then left again. Was never here. We're part of the Mount Joy district, but I've never had the opportunity to worship with you this morning. We come from a little congregation in Owosso, Michigan, Way of Truth congregation. We used to say I come from Central Michigan, but we're no longer in Central Michigan. It's more, I'm not sure what part of Michigan. It's not really southern either, but we're about an hour and 20 minutes south of where Great Lakes was, where we were part of. Now we are part of the outreach there. So come visit us sometime. We're a small congregation, around 60 people, but we love the Lord, and we enjoy our new home there. This morning, I'd like to look at a subject that I didn't know how it would tie into our Sunday school lesson, but as we went through the Sunday school lesson, I was impressed with the focus on the divine power, the divine authority, and the divine perception, and especially that word perception really jumped out at me. And so often, how we perceive something makes a huge difference in how we act on it, how we perceive it, how we understand it, how we comprehend it. And I was also very impressed with the faith of Jesus' mother. Greg already referred to that or a reference to that. She had full confidence that what Jesus said would happen. If he took care of the situation, that they were in good hands. Well, sometimes we hear people making statements like this. We as Christians operate with a different value system, or maybe we have a different perspective, or we operate on a different system. We probably all agree with that, that we as Christians operate on a different system. Or another statement we sometimes hear is, we play by different rules, it's a different set of standards. The world has theirs, and we have ours. Again, I think we can agree with that statement. Or we might even say that God has a different value system. And this morning I'd like to preach a message entitled Developing a Godly Value System. Developing a Godly Value System. And I'd like to, first of all, help us to understand what I mean when I talk about a value system. Brought a little object lesson with. I don't know if you enjoy object lessons or not. I find object lessons really help us sometimes make a point. In Bangladesh, I spent quite a bit of time over there, they really like object lessons. Somehow their minds can really help them understand. So I brought a couple items with to help try to develop a concept of what I mean by value. And I'm going to put them up here. Here's a bottle of water, a lighter. And I've got two other objects yet. And I don't know if you know what this is. It's a little vial of insulin. No, maybe somebody takes insulin here. Does anybody know what this is? I think we all know what this is. $100 bills. I've got a whole stack of them here, actually. It's actually $1,000 here. $1,000 here. Now, is anybody willing to place these in order of value? Do I have them in order of value? I actually just randomly pulled them out of the little bag that I had. I guess I did choose to pick this out last. So if you were to put these in order of value, what order would you place them? If I asked someone to come up and say, pick one, I think most of you would probably pick this one. But why? Why would we pick the $1,000? Well, I can tell you right now, at home, I have a daughter. She's 25 years old. She was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes at 4 years old. And if she would not have this, she would not live very long. This is extremely valuable to her. And there's times when I've already thought about it. What if we no longer could get this? What would happen? Well, the truth is, as a price, back when she was 4 years old, you could buy this pretty inexpensively. But the price kept going up higher and higher. But we still bought it. We still considered it important enough to go buy it. What about a lighter? This is an old lighter that I use at home. It works. I think I bought it at the dollar store for a couple bucks. But what if you were lost in the woods somewhere, truly lost, and a storm came up, and you were just at the beginning stages of hypothermia? What value would you place on this lighter? Would this $1,000 do you any good? We all know that's the truth is it would do you no good. But this lighter could save your life, literally, could save your life. The same is true with this bottle of water. I bought this case of bottled water for $4.95, I think, 24 bottles. So this thing's not even worth a dollar. In the idea of fair market value. Because sometimes we talk about fair market value, what something is worth. But the truth is that the value of something changes drastically. Let's talk about that. Value, the monetary worth of something, the market price, the fair market value of something. Sometimes you go into an auction and something sells for thousands of dollars. Why does it sell for that price? Well, there's obviously two people there that believe it is worth something and they desperately want it. They want it. Well, the truth is that if you were lost in the woods and you were going to die if you didn't have a lighter, and somebody came stumbling along and said, I'll sell you this for $10,000. You wouldn't hesitate. If there was a way for you to produce $10,000, you would buy that lighter because it would save your life. So the point is very clear that value can change depending on our need or supply. Value changes. If the need is a life or death situation, value quickly changes. You know, you read stories of people that were traveling across a desert and their vehicle breaks down. Just a simple thing, but their vehicle, they cannot go anymore. And if they don't have water, they die. There's people that literally died because they did not have water. Suddenly, water would have a tremendous value. What if it's a matter of life or death spiritually? Obviously, that's where I want to go with this message. Matthew 16:26 says, for what is a man profit if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? How would you put a value on a man's soul? How would you put a price tag on it, is what he's saying. Well, last Sunday I preached a message on true greatness, and somewhere in the message I tied in this thought of people that are very rich and wealthy. The richest man in the world, I think, is worth $731 billion. And our minds can't even wrap around that. But one of the points I made then is that $731 billion does him absolutely no good if he's not right with the Lord. He's actually the poorest man in the world if he doesn't have that. How do you put a value on a human soul that will live for all eternity? Well, I'm convinced that God values each and every human soul. Every human soul that was ever created, God values. And the reason I know that he values it is because of the Messiah. Jesus, God sent Jesus to redeem our souls. Turn with me in Galatians 4 for a scripture reading on the value of a soul or what Jesus did in redeeming us. Galatians chapter 4, just a couple verses, verse 4 through 7. But when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. And because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Wherefore thou art no more a servant, but a son, and if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. And I just love this terminology here. To redeem us, and that we might receive the adoption, the sense of belonging. We were redeemed. You know, we all understand that we were headed for eternal destruction, and we were bought back. We were redeemed. How valuable is that? The question we need to ask ourselves, how much value do we place on that redemption, that adoption, that belonging in God's house? Turn with me to 1 Corinthians 6 for a couple more verses to help us to clearly understand the point I'm trying to make here. 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20. 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20. What? Know you not that your body is a temple of the Holy Ghost which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not of your own? For you were bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. I like where he says that you were bought with a price. What was that price? What was the price? Did we have a price tag on us? What was that price that we were bought with? The suffering and death of Jesus, that was the price. Jesus was willing to pay the price to redeem us. So now that we've established the great value God puts on a human soul, what else does God value? I'm not aware of anywhere that you can just turn in the Bible and find a list of all the things that God values. Now obviously, you could say, turn to the Ten Commandments. Obviously, God has a tremendous value in those things. But it's interesting, as I was thinking about this, what does God value? What does God really value? I thought of, there's a passage in Proverbs where it tells us seven things that the Lord hates. It says seven things that God hates. So obviously, if he hates these seven things, then he must value the opposite of that, right? So let's turn to Proverbs 6 and look at that list of seven things that God hates. That is very strong language. We teach our children that they shouldn't hate people. But it is okay and proper to hate sin and hate the things that God hates. Proverbs 6, verse 16 through 19. It says, these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, and a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. So these are seven things that God hates. So like I said, God must obviously value the opposite of this. So we can take from this passage that God values honesty, human life, integrity, obedience, and love and truth in the brotherhood. And if you go on in this passage and you read verse 20 to 23, we can also see that God places value on children following their parents' godly values. It says, my son, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life. I really like the word picture that we see in verse 23 here. That we grasp that the commandment is a lamp, and a law is a light. Can we grasp that? The things that God values, the things that these value system can guide us, it can direct us, it can show us the way. You know, children, this morning, I'm sure you're very much like I was as a child. I often saw the correction or the direction that my parents gave me as restrictive, or as it hindered me. It wasn't what I wanted to do, or I didn't always want to embrace that. But don't look at that. Rather, as a light to guide your feet on the path of life. You know, if you have godly parents this morning, they are trying to help you establish a godly value system. That's why they're asking you to do these things, or they're asking you not to do certain things. So what are the values that we are embracing today? I think for all of us, it's very, very important that we truly think about this. At our fall conference, I was asked to preach a message on helping us to relate to the gender crisis that we're in. I think we all realize that we wouldn't even be having this conversation or wouldn't even have needed to preach that message if everyone in the world would embrace godly values and live them out. We would never, because sometimes we ask the question, how in the world do we get to where we are today in our world? What is precisely because godly values have lost their value or their importance in many, many people's lives. So I think we do well to stop and look at and examine the value system that we use to make our decisions in life. Now, I don't know, I didn't ask Google this question or Siri, but how many decisions do we make in a day's time? I don't know the answer to that question. But I'm convinced we make many, many, many choices and decisions in our lives today. Well, a number of years ago, a man made this profound quote. It's not original by me, but I want you to listen very closely. What he said, decision-making is easy when our values are crystal clear. Decision-making is very easy when our values are crystal clear. To make this point clear in our minds, was it hard for you to decide to come to church this morning? Did you spend a lot of time thinking, now, should I finish that construction project? Or is the land dry enough to start planting or tilling the soil? Or should I do this sewing project or should I go to church? I don't think any of you had that. Maybe you did. Hopefully you didn't. Most of us, our value system just simply is Sunday morning. We get up, we go to church, right? But will it be hard for you to decide whether you're going to go home for lunch or go to the hostess family's for lunch or go to Applebee's or, maybe you don't have Applebee's around here. Is that going to be a hard decision to make? When you get in your vehicle, will you look at your wife and say, well, honey, where are we going to go for lunch today? You know, what? No, I don't think, again, that's a hard decision because we have already, there's a value system that tells us what we do on Sundays and what we don't. Is it hard for you to make a decision when you hand a clerk a $100 bill and she makes change and when you count your change, you discover she gave you $20 extra? Is it hard for you to decide what to do with that extra $20? Again, if you were taught what I was taught as a child, you wouldn't even hesitate. You'd just simply say, wait a minute, you gave me too much money. Why? Why do we do those things? Why do we make those choices? Because there is a value system that is in place. We have a value system built into us to appreciate honesty and to honor the Lord's Day. And with those value systems in place, decision-making is very, very easy. But you will find in life that not every decision is that easy and simple. Why is that? Well, I'm going to suggest that it's because we do not have a solid enough value system placed in our lives. We are torn at times between the world system and God's system. And whether we want to admit it or not, we are influenced by what the world values. We're influenced by that. When the world holds something up as very valuable, that does have an influence on us. Well, the goal of this message this morning is to help strengthen our awareness and desire to value the things that God values and hate the things that God hates. And as we face the decisions in life, that we make the right choices because of that value system is in place. You know, there's no way to cover all the things that God values in one sermon, but I like to look at a number of one. And the first one I'd like to look at is separation. And you might immediately think, well, we understand separation. We're different from the world. But I'd like to go to a deeper, more foundational separation of what I'm talking about here. In Romans 1:1, Paul says this, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of God. You know, a true Christian is one whose inward and outward life is conformed to the teaching of Jesus Christ. And I'm convinced that God's value system and the world's value system always cause a separation. always. They never work together. Light and darkness do not mix. We understand that light and darkness do not mix. Truth and lies do not mix. Either it's true or it's a lie. Pride and humility do not mix. Remember what he says here? You proud look. It's one of the things that God hates. Pride and humility do not mix. Murder and respect for human life are direct opposites. To give someone loving encouragement or to gossip and slander bring drastically different results. It's different. If we want to experience true peace and joy in our Christian experience, we must value the things that God values and separate ourselves from the things that God hates. Another quote, if we adopt the world's lifestyle and value system, we will have the world's problems. Is that true? Absolutely true. If we embrace and accept the world's lifestyle and their value system, how they do things, we will have the world's problems. You know, that's such an elementary concept, but so many people have to learn it the hard way. They want the world's pleasure. They want the things that they can get from the world, but they don't want the world's problems. But you can't separate them. So I like to build on this foundation that there is a separation, a clear dividing line between what God values and what the world values. And we need to get that right. So building on that foundation, I'd like to look at a number of other principles that we need to value in order to make the right decisions. Because I've heard, I don't know how many times already in my short life, people will say, well, how do we get there? Why are we grappling with this? Now, even in the church, sometimes we say, well, how do we get here? How do we get ourselves in this situation? Well, I'm convinced that it is because of our value system or lack thereof. We do not value the things that God values. So another principle that I'd like to look at this morning is modesty. Does God value modesty? Or is that just a concept that the Mennonites came up with? Is that just the Mennonites came up with this idea that modesty would be a good thing? I believe that modesty is a principle and a godly value that God values. I must tell you that true modesty comes as a result of a morally pure heart. That's where true modesty comes from. Well, I'm going to tell you this morning that modesty is not something that the Mennonites invented. Modesty is something that the Bible speaks about. 1 Timothy 2:9, in like manner also the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. I'd also like to look at 1 Peter. Let's turn to that one. 1 Peter 3. There's some verses there that speak about the principle of modesty. 1 Peter 3:3-4. Says, whose adorning let it not be that of the outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or putting on of apparel, but let it be of the hidden man of the heart and that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. Here we hear that great price again. You know, ladies, often we look at you when we talk about this subject, but for men it could be you as well. But for this morning, think about what you could use this $1,000 for in the beauty department of a store to buy what the world calls beautiful, what they would consider beautiful. But what value do you think God would put on it? What value would he put on it? First Peter says, What does he say has a great price? What you can buy at the beauty department? Is that what it says? No, it says even the outward of a meek, the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God, of a great price. Do we understand that? Sisters, this morning, the beautiful thing is that God values cannot be bought with money. You cannot go to the store and buy a meek and quiet spirit. I don't care if you have $1 million. You cannot buy a meek and quiet spirit. I'm convinced that the beautiful things that God values cannot be bought with money. And that is why they are so valuable. That is why they are so valuable. It's because you cannot buy them with money. Romans 12:1 goes on. It says, tells us that we should present our bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. Is that how we are presenting our bodies, holy and acceptable to God? I'm convinced that if that is how we are presenting our bodies, that will be in stark contrast to how the world views fashion and beauty. If they can observe a meek and quiet spirit, someone that is not flaunting themselves, that is not exposing their body to make it beautiful. You know, the world tells you that that's how you have to do it. You have to flaunt yourself. You have to expose your body to make it beautiful. But that is a lie. That is a lie from the devil. If we have a morally pure heart, we will value the principle of modesty, and it will be easy to practice. Remember the statement that I made? If God's values are crystal clear in our minds, decision-making is easy. You know, if in our hearts we are morally pure, we have embraced the value of modesty. We understand that. Decision-making becomes easy. We don't spend a lot of time deciding, can I do this or can I do that? One of the most things that disturbs me so much, we spend so much time trying to figure out if others do it or if the church allows it. That should not even be in our conversation. Does God allow it? That should be the discussion we should be having. Does God value it or does God hate it? Well, men, for this morning, I want to now, the next point, it's for all of us, but I'd like to focus on us, moral purity. Does God value moral purity? Absolutely, he does. Are we committed to moral purity? How high is our standard for this principle? And what are we willing to change in our lifestyle to maintain moral purity? A number of years ago, actually probably 20-some years ago, I worked for a man who had really struggled in this area. And I saw him making terrible choices. Choices that were going to take him in the wrong direction. And I finally quit working him primarily for that reason. I had other things I wanted to pursue, but I did not feel comfortable with the witness that he was leaving. And this was a man who was professing to be a Christian. And a number of years later, he ended up in jail. All because he did not live a morally pure life. He did not live a morally pure life. He did not value what God values. 2 Timothy 2:22 says, "Flee also youthful lusts, but follow after righteousness, faith, charity, and peace with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart." The very first verse, word there in that verse says, "Flee." What part of flee don't we understand? Sometimes I wonder, what part of flee don't we understand? We understand how to flee physical danger. I'm convinced that if we had even the slightest concern that this building was going to collapse on us, we would get out, we'd find the exit doors, we'd get out of here. We would flee. If we are in an automobile accident and our vehicle is in danger of bursting into flames, we would flee that vehicle. Well, I'm telling you this morning, this man that I was referring to, if he would have taken advice from this verse, if he would have fled these situations, he would not have ended up in jail. Joseph is another good example of someone who was willing to flee. You know, he didn't spend a lot of time reasoning with Potiphar's wife. Genesis 39:12 says, "She caught him by his garment, saying, 'Lie with me,' and he left his garment and fled." He got out of there. In the other earlier verses, she had approached him and he had told her no. But this particular time, I think he realized that the time for talking was over. He needed to just flee. He needed to get out of there. Why is it so hard for us to flee? Is it because maybe we don't have the same God value system, the same value system that God does? Or we don't see it as dangerous? Let's turn to Proverbs 7, verse 24 and 27. Specifically focused on the idea that God values moral purity. Proverbs 7, verse 24 to 27. Verse 24 of chapter 7. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O you children, attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to go to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she has cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. Do we believe these words? Are the words that the proverb writer wrote here still apply to our day today? Absolutely. But I'm convinced that in our day, and in our days in the past, many strong and intelligent men who thought they were able to stand, they could handle this, but they were slain spiritually by not maintaining moral purity. I'm convinced that God values moral purity. We must value it and practice it. We must be willing to look at it the way God looks at it. Because if we don't, it says, her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. That is where impurity leads us to, is to the ways of death. Next one I would like to look at is honesty. Does God value honesty? Absolutely, God values honesty, and he requires it. But you know, we grew up, like I said, probably with godly parents who taught us honesty. But I'd like to take it to a deeper level. How honest are we in every aspect of our lives? You know, in Acts 5, I'm not going to take the time to read that account. Ananias and Sapphira lost their lives because of deception. Because of deception. They played out this deceiving. They tried to deceive and say they sold their property for X amount of dollars and they were going to donate it all, but they had kept some back. They lost their lives physically, and they are spiritually, they are dead, living in hell right now, all because of that deception. All for a couple of dollars. Why would anyone do that? Or would we? Would we do that? Missing heaven, is $1,000 worth missing heaven? How about $10,000? If by withholding the truth or manipulating the truth to gain $1,000 or $10,000, is that worth missing heaven? How honest are we in our business dealings? I think we need to all think about that. How honest are we in our business dealings? Remember, it's just money. You can't take it with you. You know, we say that very glibly, but do we understand that concept? Well, we want to be good businessmen, make wise choices. That's true. But how honest are we? How honest are we? How honest are we with other people around us, with our spouses? Or this may be the reason why there's so many struggling and broken marriages, is because we're not honest. We're not honest enough. How honest are we in the church? Is it okay to do things the church doesn't allow as long as they don't find out? After all, we don't have a conviction on it, so why is it okay for us to make those decisions? Everyone else is doing it. Why can't we? How honest are we with ourselves? You know, a lot of moral and spiritual disasters could be avoided if we were totally honest with ourselves. And we would seek help before it's too late. But so many times we say, I've got this. I got this. We're not honest with ourselves and don't realize the danger that we are in. Well, moving on. Self-denial. Does God value self-denial? Is self-denial a value that is practical in 2024? Is this something that God values and will help us make our decisions and practices? I believe it is. But I believe self-denial is rapidly becoming an antique practice. But it dare not be. It dare not be. Let's look at what Jesus said in Mark 8. Mark 8, verse 34 to 38. It talks about self-denial. Mark chapter 8, verse 34. And when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, he said unto them, Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. In this verse, we see that self-denial is extremely valuable. It is a life or death concept, a heaven or hell decision. It will determine whether we are a disciple of Jesus or we're following the world. Do you know what the world says? The world says, if it feels good, do it. If you like it, buy it. If it tastes good, eat it. And if the way is too hard, choose a different road. If your church is too restrictive, get another one. Find another church. If you don't like your boss, quit your job. If you can't pay your bills, file for bankruptcy. And if your wife gets on your nerves, leave her. No, that's what the world says. That's what they say. That's the world's value system in a nutshell. Life is short. Live it for yourself. You deserve it. That's what the average selfish person of the world would tell you. Well, the question I have for us this morning is how much of that thinking has crept into our churches and into our homes? Well, I'm convinced that it's time that we wake up and we truly look at some of these things that I've been talking about. If there ever was a time for us and for men and women to stand up and live a life of self-denial, it is today. We need to teach it to our children what self-denial looks like. And I'm talking to myself as well. We need to teach it. Don't expect your teenagers to say no to the pleasures of the world if they have not learned what no means as a child. Self-denial is an imperative value if we want to maintain a Christian separated life. Listen closely to this. A religion that does nothing for God, gives nothing, costs nothing, suffers nothing, is also worth nothing. Think about that for just a little bit. A religion that does nothing for God, gives nothing, costs nothing, suffers nothing, is also worth nothing. And I'm not promoting this morning to work out our salvation and that we have to pay God for our salvation. That's not at all the point. The point is that as we go through life, if living for God costs us nothing and we don't have to suffer, well, I'll go and preach the message on the cost of being a Christian. And brothers and sisters, I can tell you right now that I have experienced people in other countries who the cost of following Christ has made them, they look at Christianity completely different than we do, because I don't think sometimes that we grasp what it costs to be a Christian today. We just simply are going through the motions too many times. We just go through the motions of being a Christian. But remember that if it costs us nothing and if we do not suffer, it's also worth nothing. My last one here, I guess there's two more here. Stewardship. Does God care how I spend my money? Does God care and value how I spend my money? Surely as long as I give God 10%, he doesn't care what I do with the rest of my money. Is that true? Is that a true statement? Or if I can afford it, as long as I can afford it, I can buy it, right? Was that a safe method to use to purchasing our decisions? Well, you know, I'm amazed how many people use that. As long as the money is there, spend it. Surely there's a deeper value system than that to decide how to spend our money than whether the checkbook balance allows it or not. Does the teaching on self-denial fit here? Just because we can afford it, does that mean we should buy it? I'm convinced that we should understand the concept of the self-denial here as well and apply it. I'm convinced that by the way we use our money, it becomes very clear whether we are making earthly investments or heavenly investments. I know we all need to make money. We need to buy things. We need to live. We need to have a vehicle to drive down the road. But I'm talking about a foundational concept here of what we do with the resources that God gives us. How do we value that? Where do we go for direction on making decisions on stewardship? Do we turn to the Word of God? Or we go to advisors from the world? You know, you can go to places where they give you wealth advice, how to deal with your wealth. Should we darken the doors of those offices? It's for you to think about. Okay, my last point here, obedience. Does God value obedience, just plain and simple obedience? We talked about that briefly in our Sunday school this morning. Does God value obedience? Now, 1 Samuel 15:22, and Samuel said, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams." So does God value obedience? He's saying you can go through all the motions of doing these sacrifices, but God, what he was looking for is people who are willing to obey. Does God notice when we don't obey? What about the time when Moses hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock? Did God notice that? Absolutely he did. Was it a big deal to God that Adam and Eve ate of that fruit off that tree in the garden? Absolutely. And the time what we refer to where Saul disobeyed God and he offered a sacrifice that was only for Samuel to do. Did God notice when those things happened? Absolutely. And each of those three times, those acts of disobedience caused serious consequences. So my question for you this morning is, does God expect us in this age that we live in of love and grace, does God expect us to obey? Are there consequences for disobedience today? Well, Romans 6:16 says, "Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or obedience unto righteousness." So what I'm going to tell you this morning, that we are all obeying something or somebody. You know, when you go and you go shopping and you make decisions to buy things in the beauty department, or whatever it is, for your own personal pleasure, your own, who are you obeying? Whose voice are you obeying? Or we go out to buy a vehicle, or we buy this or that. What value system do we use to make those decisions? Whose voice are we obeying? Does God value obedience? Do you think he notices when you don't obey? One of the things that I find disturbing is when I hear people say, "Well, as long as, you know, the preacher doesn't know about it, as long as dad doesn't know about it, or as long as the police doesn't catch us or doesn't notice it. Is that the value system that we should be using? Absolutely not. Where is the fear of God? God always knows it. Does God notice when I don't obey? Disobedience always brings consequences. I will tell you that this morning. Maybe not immediate consequences, but eventually there's always consequences to disobedience. And yes, God does notice when I don't obey him. In conclusion, what does God value today? What are your values? What values do you use to make your decisions? Remember, decision-making is easy when our values are crystal clear. I would really challenge each of you to go home and really think about what value system are you using? Because I'm convinced that faith, values, and godly practices are inseparable. You know, our faith in God and the values that we put into our lives and then godly practices are inseparable. They all tie together. I would like to close with the words of Paul to the Philippians. He says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things." Now I'm going to add my own words here at the end. Why? Because God values these things. This verse there in Philippians, God values these things. And finally, the words of King Solomon, the wisest man in Ecclesiastes, says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments." Why? For this is the whole duty of man. Let's kneel for prayer.